Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Welcome to Point of View. My name is Pimelo Modena. Thank you so much for being with us. Boy, oh boy, a lot is going on politically. And I think it's one of those nights where you're going to just sit it out and just wait, because there are meetings upon meetings happening. And we're actually told that for some, people's telephones were, cell phones were taken away from them because, you know, they need to make sure that things don't leak. So the ANC Working Committee meeting today, I'm not sure whether that meeting has ended. I have no idea, but it was meant to start at 10. And nobody's speaking, but we're going to have Lukhona Mnguni, who's going to help us assess really where we are right now. Lots of moving parts, quite difficult to tell actually. So we're going to have a conversation with him. And then we're going to go to the Children's Summit, which took place over the past couple of days. I think very, very important. Children from the continent meeting from 33 countries. And it was completely led by them, the agenda set by them. And I think what they had to say is really, really important. I think all of us need to reflect on that. Let's go straight to my first guest, Lukhona Mnguni, who is a political analyst on the line with us this evening. Mr. Mnguni, good evening and welcome. I think you're muted. Lukhona, thank you so much for joining us. Hi. All right. I'm not sure. Lukhona, can you hear me? Please unmute.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome to Point of View. Listen.
Thank you so much. I've got a little man, so I was putting him off to sleep.
Okay.
Just so you know, our struggles of parenting are still real.
All understood. So we are told of this ANC Working Committee having taken place since 10 this morning. I mean, I don't know how much you've been able to gather since then, but just contextualize for us right now with all the moving parts. What to expect out of all of this?
Well, I mean, you know what is quite interesting about today's meeting is that it comes on the backdrop, of course, of the drama that we have been seeing with the budget. It wasn't tabled in February, and then it was only tabled in March. And, of course, there's a massive fallout with the ANC's key member of the GNU, which is the DA, and they now have taken the matter to court, and we'll have to see what that says. There's been a lot of talk in public from the ANC universe, including the deputy president actually earlier this morning, in terms of what it is to be expected that the ANC might deliberate on. No doubt that there is an agenda item on whether or not they should ditch the DA, but I think that there's a lot of consideration, Pimelo, in terms of what are the consequences of doing that, and what would be, the net effect of ditching the DA. It's one thing if the DA was to walk out itself, which it seems as if the DA has taken a position not to walk out, even though in the DA universe there are people that believe that the DA should abandon the GNU. But I think it's much more difficult for the ANC when I know that the president said the ball is in their court. I actually think that the ball is in the ANC's court as to what they do. If they don't act on the DA, despite their feelings of being hard done by the party, if they don't act, they may be seen as weak. If they do act, the markets might react negatively, because they might read it as the ANC letting go of a rational coalition partner, and of course the uncertainty would be who becomes the new anchor for the ANC, because I do think that the whole election essay Bossa kind of anchoring is a little bit weak, in the sense that it gives the ANC at most 202 votes, and you can't guarantee that every day there's going to be everybody present in parliament, which then would mean that they might lose some votes. And I think it's a critical moment for the ANC, for the GNU, but I do think that all said and done, this is the pains and the pangs of coalition politics. It's just that it's something that's quite new to us. We've seen it happening in local municipalities, but not at a national stage as we are seeing it.
Let's talk a little bit about the open letter, not so open letter, or meant to be open letter by Business Unity South Africa. What did you make of that?
Well, I think that was unsurprising. I mean, I did say this in a podcast interview with Sizwe Mpofu-Walsh soon after the elections, that, you know, My reading is that business was quite critical in terms of formulating this coalition arrangement that we have. And I think that business is going to look after its own interest. And that's why they are probably being vocal, as I'm saying to you. What we would probably see is the, you know, a poor performance of the stocks. If the DA was to be teffed out of the government of national unity, that immediately affects business. You will know that the biggest beneficiaries of the GNU post the elections was business, in terms of the green rally that we saw in the JSE and in terms of the currency performance, the rand to dollar. Now, people might not like that reality, but it actually does communicate and reaffirm that, you know, business has a lot of sway. Of course, the president is a businessman, after all. So why would business not feel that they are in the pound seat in this particular moment? And they're talking to one of their own, somebody whom they know from various boardrooms of different companies where he has material interests and so on. So I think business is quite emboldened in the era of President Ramaphosa, because they do feel that they are appealing to somebody who understands their universe quite well. And I think that becomes a bit of a crippling effect for the ANC in terms of what it may wish to do politically, but is unable to do it, because in actual fact, the person at the helm of the party has this, you know, material interest and coordinated to a large extent a vested interest with business. And I think that's an interesting thing to remember, that you're not just dealing with a president who's simply a politician. He has material business interests, and therefore business people may feel it's easier to appeal to him. We've seen Pimel, of course, previously business trying and attempting to intervene. You'll remember when former President Jacob Zuma appointed Des van Rooyen, for example, as Minister of Finance. Business came out quite strongly in terms of lobbying that be undone, and of course it took a weekend and it was undone. So it's not as if it's the first time we are seeing business communicating its interests. Yeah. And I think it tells us a lot in terms of how the political universe is impacted on, or at least business has direct interest. It may not always want to speak out, but when they do, I think they want to be taken seriously.
So of course, I mean, coalitions are not easy to manage. And I'm wondering what you feel here would have been, you know, the thinking behind the DA's decisions in not supporting the fiscal framework. And now, on the one hand, one may say they had to do something to appease their constituency in the fact that they had not really done their job in pushing back against Bella, the Appropriation Act, as well as the NHI. And so they needed to show some level of resistance. And yet we are here now where, you know, you are hearing the deputy president of the country saying, well, maybe we need to start discussing their role in the GNU. In your view, you know, did they maybe overplay their hand, or was this strategically speaking directly to their own constituency?
Well, I don't even think that it was overplaying their hand. I think to a large degree they were a bit unstrategic. In the sense that, Pimelo, you know, some of these issues, for example, if you look at the Expropriation Act, it's a matter that they've now gone to court with. So you can't have your cake and eat it. You know, you can't double dip, as the case were. So they have to logically await the Expropriation Act court process to come to fruition in the way that they want. If you look at Bella, if you look at NHI, I mean, these are pieces of legislation, by the way, that were passed by the previous parliament. In the previous parliament, the ANC had majority. The DA was not in a coalition with the ANC. It's almost, in fact, I have said in previous conversations about this issue, I think that actually the DA wants to move towards unconstitutional grounds, because there's a clear path in terms of how you pass legislation in South Africa. It's constitutionally mandated. And once you've gone through the processes of public participation, the House has voted and the president has enacted, to then want to ipso facto try and undo those pieces of legislation, I think there's something wrong there, because you are now no longer within the legislated prescripts on how laws are enacted. Mm-hmm. And I find that quite unconstitutional. And in actual fact, it's a massive attempt to subvert the Constitution. Because if the ANC was to yield, let's say, mm-hmm. for an instance, let's say the ANC was to yield on demands on Bella. Mm. What legal instrument would be utilized to effect those changes? Mm. Because the pieces of legislation go through as bills from cabinet to parliament, and then they become enacted by the president and they become an act of law.
Yeah.
Once the president has enacted, what instruments, what legal instruments are available to then insert and amend certain things? Which is why I felt that even the president's sort of, you know, a leeway of a couple of months, 3 months, I think it was, after he had enacted Bella to say there will be public consultation, it was illegal. Because the public consultation stops when Parliament is done and takes a vote on the matter and effect whatever other, you know, amendments that they would have gotten from the public and so on, and then send that as a passed bill of Parliament to the president.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to say that I don't even think that they overplayed their hand. I think they were just simply unstrategic. They invited matters that do not belong to the budget into the budget process. Whereas I think they still could have made a case, for example, around the cost of living. That was one of their campaign platforms, if you remember, for the 2024 elections. They even did pickets on the cost of living issue. They could have really hammered on the issue of tax VAT not being welcome, because it would push the cost of living. But of course, it does seem as if they were playing politics, in the sense that they were then willing, it is reported, they were willing, and of course, there's a document that has been leaked, whether it's legitimate or not, that I went through yesterday. But it is reported that indeed they would have supported a VAT increase if they had made, grounds on their demands politically. And I think the two are not interchangeable. They're not intermarried. And I think it was actually quite a very unstrategic position for them.
And so where does this leave them? You know, after the meeting today with the working committee and the ANC, what do you think they're thinking right now as the ANC meets?
Well, I think they're anticipating as to whether or not they will get that proverbial phone call that they may not wish to get, which would effectively release some of their ministers and deputy ministers in government. But, Pimelo, I mean, we must also be mindful in terms of what that would mean. Of course, that may well mean that then we could we see a motion of no confidence on the Deputy Speaker of the National Assembly? What would become of the portfolio chairpersons, portfolio committee chairpersons of the DA in the National Assembly? So I think it's not an easy route for anybody. I mean, what happens to the KwaZulu-Natal government? In terms of the provincial, government of provincial unity, would the ANC be willing to let go of the DA? What would that mean? Would they then have to go with MK? Because I mean that legislature is quite limited in terms of the options that are available to the ANC by virtue of MK having 45% stake in that legislature. So I think the DA will probably be anticipating. Do they get a call from the ANC? But I think it's less of a headache for them. It's probably more of a headache for the ANC in terms of what does the organization do and how does it pivot? Because this is still an organization that wishes to regain lost ground electorally.
Yeah.
And of course, the writing is quite on the wall that they continuously look weak. And the more they push ahead, you know, with this VAT increase, the more they alienate society from the ANC in actual fact. And I'm not sure at what point the ANC itself is thinking about political trade-offs and whatever Enoch Godongwana might believe, along with Treasury, is the best foot forward in terms of fiscal consolidation, but I don't see how they return from this politically, and I'm not sure as a declining party you want to create such, you know, injury to yourself where you increase VAT and all of society will know that it was you. And I mean, if you look between the VAT increase of 2018 and the ANC's electoral fortunes since then, and of course it's not just the VAT, it's the corruption, things, it's the inept leadership, it's, I mean, it's much more nuanced than that, but I'm trying to say society then feels alienated and keeps, you know, saying you are the one punishing us with all these, you know, things that take away from our household ability to spend and our pockets as individuals and so on. Of course, the bracket creep is probably even much more worse in terms of the taxes that have not been, personal income tax that has not been adjusted to inflation in terms of the tax brackets. So I'm trying to say that as much as the DA is probably worried about the ANC meeting, I think, I mean, somebody, as your earlier point said to me today, somebody was saying to me earlier today, you know, this is probably the most quiet NWC we have ever heard. We're not hearing anything. And it may well be that there's nothing much to hear.
I want to park the ANC a little bit because you make some very important points. But let's end off with the DA, which I think inside the DA, they themselves, I think, are quite divided about what has just happened. You made the point that, you know, this was a strategic mistake. I have a feeling not everybody was on the same page about this particular move.
No, absolutely. I mean, the DA generally, in terms of its own participation and continued participation in the GNU, has not been on the same page for some time. I mean, you just have to go back. You remember when the clearinghouse was launched as sort of a structure that would help to mediate differences within the GNU. The DA's representative to that clearinghouse at first was Dean McPherson. And when the Bella matter went to the clearinghouse, Paul Mashatile, who chairs the clearinghouse, sort of outmaneuvered the DA, and there was a lot of unhappiness in the DA universe. And of course, then after that, Dean McPherson was actually replaced by Helen Zille. So you get a sense that, you know, there is this tussle about where the center of power lies. Now, the difficulty you have in the DA universe is that the leader of the DA participates in the GNU. He's a minister. And of course, wants the GNU to work and make sure that the positions of the GNU are well articulated and to an extent supported. Helen Zille, on the other hand, being an outsider to the GNU, wants to maintain the posture, the identity of the DA as a party that can still, you know, self-identify away from the ANC, make sure that the ANC does not swallow them in this GNU, because that's the difficulty sometimes, Pimelo, of coalition politics, is that you may participate in a coalition government, society would be happy with your participation, but actually your participation slowly vanishes you out of the political landscape because you don't have, you know, your identity and so on. And I think part of the difficulty for the DA and what they are trying to do with all the moves that, you know, whether they are going to court on this, they disagree with the ANC on certain things, and I think that the ANC is not is to an extent whether they are being kind or not to the DA is something to be seen in future. But I think the DA, what they are trying to do is to make sure that they retain their identity and not die with the GNU, because if their net analysis is that, you know, the choice, the policy choices, the budget priorities of the ANC don't speak to the DA constituency, they may well lose some of their supporters. And of course, the DA is well aware of, you know, political parties that are also making inroads in terms of some of their constituents. I mean, if you look, for example, in Gauteng, they are not in government in the province. They've been, you know, teft out of all the three metropolitan municipalities in the province, and Action SA is making serious headways in the city of Tshwane, for example, and so on. So the DA then does not want to die in terms of the popular memory of the public, and therefore they will do whatever is necessary at times to oppose while they co-govern with the ANC.
Let's talk then about Action SA and this particular move. In your view, will this yield results for Action SA?
I actually think that they could have set this one out, to be quite honest, because if come 1 May 2025, when you and I go to the shops, our receipt says 15.5% in terms of VAT. Action SA will be part to blame.
Yeah.
And it may well undo the work that they have managed to do in Tshwane, for example. Of course, they have a speaker in the city of Johannesburg. So they are working quite well with the ANC in Gauteng. Now, what we might not know is whether they needed to secure the ANC in the National Assembly for them to have continued security in the city of Tshwane. That we don't know. So we don't know the nature and the character of the discussions, but there's no doubt that that may well have featured in their conversations, that you support us on this. But because they came out quite strongly as saying that their proposal is actually to stop a VAT increase, if there's a VAT increase even for one day, it might well erode their political capital. And I think that they have walked themselves into a very, very tight place, along with other parties. And I keep saying, once you have to over-explain yourself, I mean, if you've been looking at Musi Maimane's timeline, for example, on X, and it's almost like an over-explanation of what you've done. If the bona fides of what you've done were to stand the test of time, then the decision would speak for itself. But once you have to overly explain and say you are protecting the rent, you are doing this, you are doing that, and you are making sure that government has a budget and so on, or the budget process would have come to a halt, which would not have. I mean, I think our legislation is fluid enough to ensure that if there's disagreement on the budget, there's still enough room for government to operate, but of course with limited safeguards in terms of how it does that. So I think an Action SA in this moment must be thinking hard in terms of what their gains are in the city of Tshwane, particularly with local government elections coming up, and whether or not the 2026 local government will mirror exactly 10 years ago, 2016 local government elections, where in some ways, people voted on national issues at a local level. Which is how the ANC lost the metros in Gauteng, for example, because people were dismayed at the behavior of then President Jacob Zuma, and they communicated that in local elections.
So, I mean, I would be worried if I were Action SA when I hear
because
the president let slip yesterday that, well, looking at where we are right now, it's very likely that, you know, we will still need to retain the VAT increase. It really sent shivers down my spine when I was thinking of what Action SA is thinking while they're busy trying to explain to everybody else that, no, there's room, we've had talks. So that makes me quite nervous on their behalf. If, however, they get what they want, then they would have to be rewarded, right, by the ANC.
Well, I mean, it's a hypothetically, yes, they would have to be rewarded. But what does the reward look like? Action SA is literally walking from what I felt, immediately after elections was a bit of a silly standpoint politically, where they were not even willing to talk to the ANC. Of course, then eventually they met with the ANC at Luthuli House, as you might remember, and they issued a very long statement about that meeting, you know, praising how good the meeting was. But then they still remained on the point of they will continue to be a constructive opposition party in parliament. The reality, though, is that they don't have the numbers. They've got 6 members of parliament. Therefore, they don't have the numbers to actually be a sizable constructive opposition. So what would the reward look like? Do they move into cabinet? I mean, for everybody you bring to cabinet, you've got to let go of somebody. If you listen to some of their utterances over the weekend, was that they wouldn't want to be part of a bloated cabinet. So they're even asking for cabinet to be even much more shrunk. And I thought that was an interesting statement for them to make, which almost probably says, well, whatever reward we get, it doesn't necessarily have to be in cabinet. And therefore, we'll have
to
see.
We don't believe that, do we? We don't believe that, do we? Of course they want
I mean, of course they'd want to be in cabinet. I think if you look in Gauteng, for example, they may well want to be roped into Gauteng because they're already working with the ANC in the metros anyway.
Yeah.
But in that Gauteng leadership, who do you disappoint, as politicians would say, versus who you appoint from action? Mm-hmm. I think that Pimelo, they are in a very untenable position because however you wish to reward them, there's somebody you have to disincentivize out of power. And I don't think that is easy. I don't think that, you know, politically, even the president has enough room to maneuver within the ANC. I mean, these are people who are still trying to go to a National General Council later on in this year. There is, of course, the issue of the National Conference that's coming up in December 2027. So it's not just about Action SA and what they believe of themselves. They are dependent on the ANC, and the ANC must also make its own calculus in terms of what is available to them politically to bring Action SA. And in actual fact, it may well be that the Action SA put out their necks for the ANC, and I mean, we've seen many people put out their necks for the ANC and not getting any reward, and they might suffer that fate.
Ouch. MK Party seems to be leaning towards the ANC. Does that come as a surprise?
Well, not entirely. I mean, look, I think MK Party is doing its own thing in terms of it has a political program. It's marching on and it's winning some wards. It won 2 wards from the ANC in the last month, one in Saldanha Bay, one in Kwatukuza last week on Wednesday. So I think that, you know, MK Party, of course, what has been unique about it as an ANC breakaway party is that it's probably the first breakaway party of the ANC in the post-unbanning period. Which has not sought to demonize the ANC. It has not sought to fight the ANC. In actual fact, what MK has done is expropriate a lot of artifacts of the ANC in terms of its history, its leaders, its colors, and its naming convention. And I think that's been very smart of them, because to me, what it says is that MK positions itself as a home away from home. And that's why they call the ANC Kwagogo. Now, if you and I know, Kwagogo is not a place that you hate. Mm-hmm. It's a place where you actually sometimes go to recharge and get new strength, newfound strength for yourself. And I think that MK Party then will always, to a level degree, be closer to the ANC than any other party, because its entire repertoire is ANC based. It's not trying to be different from the ANC. In fact, it positions itself as an antidote to the troubles that beset the ANC currently. And therefore, I think naturally they will always be available to the ANC. And I mean, if you looked at the, as we were focusing on the National Assembly vote on the budget in the National Council of Provinces, what was quite curious was that KZN actually did not vote for or against the budget in the NCOP. They actually abstained their vote, which may well be, you know, the impact of, MK, because MK was quite opposed to the VAT increase and so on. So there's quite interesting stuff that's happening. But I mean, I don't foresee them moving so close to the ANC to a point where they would be considered to be part of government. I still think that the breakup wounds are still too fresh.
All right, political analysts, I really appreciate your take there. Lukhona Mguni, thank you so much for your time.
Click kaya959.co.za. This is how we do it. to download the Point of View podcast.